what I would call probably or describe as quite extreme burnout, to the point where my body just kind of gave up on me. I had very, very high heart rate. I had a lot of vertigo type symptoms. I felt very dizzy. Mm-hmm. I had no energy. I was really, really ill. So I sought out and looked for a burnout coach, and she was amazing. She had an amazing intuition, and she could read people really, really well. And she said, every time you speak about golf, you light up. You know, it just seems like you love it. Why don't you try and figure out how to become a coach and go down that path? And yeah, it was at that moment she really pushed me to get back in. I was scared to kind of enter a new world again, but she was a big reason that I'm doing what I'm doing now.
Welcome to Golf Yourself Healthy, the podcast which invites guests from all corners of the golf, health and well-being industry to share inspiring stories and practical insights on how we can be at our best mentally, physically and socially, both on and off the golf course. I'm Chris Lynch, your host and the founder of GYH, where it is our mission to help you live happier, healthier, and more fulfilled lives through the power of golf. If that sounds like a movement and a community that you would like to be a part of, then head to golfyourselfhealthy.com and subscribe now. Today's guest, Chris Cotton, is someone who has had somewhat of an on-off relationship with golf. After a promising and coveted junior career, which led him to take up a golf scholarship in the US, it seemed like the sky was the limit for Chris. However, as is a familiar story for many aspiring professional golfers, the competition is unbelievably intense at the top level of the game, and Chris found it exceptionally challenging to make the breakthrough on the top tours. It was at that point he returned to the UK and climbed aboard the corporate treadmill in the Rat Race of London, and initially found success there and a financially rewarding career in sales. However, soon enough, Chris came to realise that he was not feeling happy nor fulfilled in this way of life, and the high-octane nature and pressures of the corporate world started to take their toll on him. Experiencing burnout is something which can happen to any of us, and I dare say many of you listening to this may have felt close to it before or have in fact experienced it firsthand. In Chris's case, for as debilitating as it was, it acted as an intervention, an opportunity for perspective, and better still, a chance for golf to reappear in his life and for him to fall back in love with the game. Today, as a golf coach operating out of Norfolk Premier Golf, where we recorded this episode, Chris is helping others to find a love for the game and inspiring them to reach their full potential. In addition to this podcast conversation, Chris and I recorded our latest Nine is Fine feature film, a series which is available to watch on our YouTube channel. That'll be available to watch there from Friday the 14th of November. As I announced recently, we have very much become a video-first production over on YouTube. Without any further ado, let's tee off and jump into the conversation. Chris Cotton, welcome to the Golf Yourself Healthy podcast.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here, so thank you.
Thanks for having me and Lewis here today. And first and foremost, always like to take a moment to thank our hosting venue, Norfolk Premier Golf. Absolutely. Grant and the team here.
Thank you, guys.
You have a club of mine next to you there, if you want to pick that up and bring
it
into shot.
Chris's 9-iron.
And why do you have a 9-iron?
We've just played 9 holes here at Norfolk Premier Golf, and we've done basically a 9-iron challenge. So on the concept, or on the theme of Chris's concept, 9 is fine, which I really like. We've played 9 holes with just a 9-iron and a putter, basically, and had loads of fun and had a really good chat. And there's a YouTube coming out, is it episode 2?
It is.
The 9 is fine series, so yeah, check it out.
You're a natural at this, Chris. That was so well done.
I'm trying my best. Beautifully
marketed. And we just played 9 holes. And I have to say, for the time of year, the course is in great condition.
Really good, yeah. Greens are running really nicely too.
They are. Yeah. Fair play to the team here. And also, it's just, if any of my listeners or viewers are ever in the Norfolk area, you need to check this place out. It is really, really good. And what all sort of modern golf facilities, I think, should look like. I read on your Instagram recently that the first club that ever graced your hands, yes, with a sawn-off 4-iron that your dad gave you.
Yeah,
Is that club still?
I think you either sink or swim if your dad does that for you. Yeah, because it was a bladed four iron. So it's a four iron blades Dunlop, maybe. Can't remember. I'm gonna say Dunlop. I was probably like 7 or 8. But yeah, you better be swinging the golf club quite well if you want to hit a blade four iron.
Totally. Well, don't we both know that golf is hard, and it does, as we've talked about already, but we're going to talk about again now, is it does build resilience. And I suppose if you've managed to survive an induction into golf that involved a sawn off four iron, you're still here today, then your dad's probably taught
it.
You well.
I'll take He's it. Probably yeah, taught my you dad's well. Quite a good golfer, so I'll take his. He might have done that intentionally. Who knows? I'll have to ask him. I've never actually asked him, but yeah.
Well, just kind of keeping on that theme for a second of you getting into golf in your early years. You want to just talk to us briefly about how?
Sure.
What was your introduction to golf? Was
from my dad's, as I said. He gave me a four iron. 9 iron would have been nicer. yeah, cut it down for me. Took me to the driving range. This is kind of seven or eight years old, and I played a lot of football really to a pretty serious level from the age of like 7 or 8. And always saw golf as a bit of an old man sport, to be very honest. So I didn't really want to play, and there was a bit of a battle in a nice way between dad and I. I was like, no, I don't want to go to golf. I want to play football. I didn't start playing golf really competitively till I was 12 or 13, probably more like 13. And then really competitively, like at sort of county level competing when I was 14 years old, something like that. So my golf career started with quite a lot of, I guess, reluctance to actually play, but I love it, and I love the fact that it's an individual sport. You know, that appealed to me when I was younger. Whatever you do, it's yours, and it's not someone's opinion, and it's if you score this scores, no one can argue with that. So yeah, that's something that drew me to golf, I think.
They're your achievements.
Exactly.
You worked hard to make them for yourself.
I played a lot of football, and that was really my first love. But football's about opinions to a degree, where golf, you can't argue if you shoot a lower score than someone else, or they beat you, vice versa. They're the winner or you're the winner. And
you've just talked about your introduction to golf.
Yeah.
You kind of went away from golf for a while.
Yeah.
And came back to it more recently.
Yeah.
I can't wait to get to talk to you about that. But given what you were just saying about getting to that sort of county level, for example, at the age of 14, 15, you know, for instance, me, and I'm sure a lot of my viewers and listeners will also find themselves in the camp of, you know, that wasn't my experience of golf growing up. I just like, I'm really curious if you look back on that time, what do you think was key to being able to improve that quickly to get to that level?
Probably two things, maybe three. Practicing a lot. School holidays, you know, that was, my parents dropped me off at the golf club and I was there all day pretty much. Very lucky that I grew up at a golf club with a lot of good other young golfers, so we pushed each other. So certainly practicing a lot, but also being around people that were better than you. And then we had a really supportive junior organizer as well at Settlescombe, the golf course that I grew up at, who's actually sadly just recently passed away. But he was a great influence and a great help to a lot of us too, growing up. So probably those three things, practicing, having really good players around you that are better than you, and then having kind of a supportive junior organizer and parents as well. My parents were great growing up too, so that helped me to get good pretty quickly. Those probably three or four things that I've just mentioned there. Yeah.
And maybe if we come back to the early years of golf, because you went to the States, didn't you?
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about that for a brief moment? How
yeah,
did that
sure.
come? I mean, was that like almost like a natural progression?
You know what, that wasn't really on the card. So until I was at sixth form, which is quite late, school teacher and then a coach of mine at the time sort of encouraged me to do it. So I ended up going to the States. I went to what's called junior college initially. So I spent a couple of years there, and then I finished at Georgia, where I spent quite a lot of my time, as I said to you earlier, when we were playing golf. So yeah, that was amazing, but it happened quite fast and definitely wasn't on the cards. Even when I was like 15, 16, playing at county level, I wasn't necessarily thinking about doing that straight away. It came sort of more like when I was 17, almost 18 really for me. So yeah.
Brilliant. You know, I suppose, and again, I'm just going by things I've read about you, and things that you've posted openly on social media and stuff.
Yeah.
Again, I encourage all of my viewers to to check out. There was a very recent Instagram post that you put out that was really lovely, that kind of tells your story.
Thank you.
And there was something in there about how you, it kind of dawned on you essentially when you were in the States that you had reached the level that you could really go to. You weren't.
Yeah.
I don't want to steal it wrong, but like
I would say that I played enough golf with enough very very good players to know that it was going to take me at least another 5 or 6 years of very very hard work to get close to what would be good enough to make it. So at that point, I wasn't anywhere near good enough to play on tour. I mean, these guys are so good.
But you're talking like with a certain level of comfort in knowing
that.
Yeah,
it's fine. I wasn't.
You weren't. You're not.
At the time, I was upset, of course, because I was younger and I'm probably older and possibly
older, wiser.
Possibly wiser. Who knows? But yeah, they're just so good to make it. It's just the level is just unbelievable. So, but I take pride now in still knowing that I'm a decent golfer and I can play a little bit and. Probably much kinder to myself now than I was when I was younger too. So, and in some ways that takes the pressure off and gives you a bit more confidence and enjoyment when you play too. But yeah, the level is a joke, to be honest, how good those guys are that are playing at tour level. So, knew that I wasn't good enough and wanted to stay out in the States and coach. And for whatever reason, mainly kind of visas and things like that, it didn't really work out. So came back to England and was pretty sad, to be quite honest, and ended up in London working in sales. So complete culture shock, career shift, probably a little bit of a loss of identity as well, not having sport anymore, because I'd been involved in kind of pretty much what I'd call elite level sport since I was like 7 or 8, training with football academies and things like that. So yeah,
a sporting environment. I mean, Grant as well, who's like, you know, the owner here, like, you know, professional rugby player
yeah.
and then into that kind of corporate type job like you're describing.
Tough.
So that said, like, you are describing a situation where you had that loss of identity, mm-hmm. which I can completely understand.
Similar,
I think,
so you're sort of transition at the moment where you're going from corporate into sport,
yeah,
but because you've been working in a corporate environment for a little over a decade,
yeah,
that's become who you see yourself as, but also who your friends, your family,
yeah.
acquaintances. So it's a really difficult shift.
Yeah.
But hopefully in your case, it's definitely for the right reasons. Mine, maybe not for the right, it's worked out all right, but you know, it maybe didn't work out so good good place as I am now initially,
sure.
but it's all ended up okay in the end. So, but yeah, it's tough. It's tough to make that shift.
Did you find at all though that there were any transferable skills that you were actually able to bring over from golf into that sort of sales environment, for example? Because again, I speak with and talk to, you know, friends, colleagues, people in my professional network who, yeah, again, similarly have kind of made that transition and found out, yeah, that, do you know what, that there are things that sports people have in their locker and their skill set that others might not. So do you find that at all?
Yeah, I definitely think we've spoken today about resilience, and I think golf is a great sport to teach you resilience, because you have to be. So when you're working in sales, similar, you're going to have a lot of knockbacks, you're going to have a lot of failures, you're going to have a lot of times that it's really going to test your patience.
Yes.
And so, yeah, certainly resilience would be one that would stand out straight away. Work ethic, discipline, turning up on time, being organized, that was drummed into me at university. And so, yeah, loads of skills, I think, from being a student athlete, as they call you when you play sport in the States at college, to working in the corporate world, there's loads of benefits and transferable skills.
How long did you spend in that environment before you've more recently come back to golf?
Corporate environment, about 5 years, five to 5.5 years, yeah.
Okay.
So quite a long time, enough time to sort of build a pretty decent career,
sure.
I'd say. Yeah.
And I want to, again, give you the floor here to tell your story in your own way, but I mean, I think to sort of frame this for a second, you know, you're sat here before me now as a golf coach who has transitioned back out of the corporate environment and now pursued what sounds like a calling.
Yeah.
I come back to golf sort of moment. But
yeah.
As much as you feel comfortable to, Chris, do you want to sort of share your story around kind of what has preceded that?
What I would call probably or describe as quite extreme burnout, to the point where my body just kind of gave up on me. So it was quite scary at the time because we didn't know what was happening. So I had very, very high heart rate. I had a lot of vertigo type symptoms. I felt very dizzy. Mm-hmm. I had no energy. I was really, really ill. Went to the doctors, did all the tests. They said nothing seems to be wrong with you medically, but they said it sounds like burnout, mental and emotional exhaustion. Yeah, and my body took basically years to recover. I had a year and a half off work and then came back into the golfing world part-time, so 10 hours a week, and incrementally built up to where I'm at kind of just under 30 hours a week now, something like that. So yeah, it was a scary time. Yeah, it was crazy to look back on now that all happened. So yeah, especially as I was fit as well.
So
it can probably happen to anyone. But yeah, we've only got a finite amount of energy. And I think when you're younger, sometimes you think you're invincible and you can just push through anything, but obviously you're not. So yeah, it was some lessons learned from that too.
I think you deserve a tremendous respect for one, having taken yourself to a doctor.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, again, without wanting to get into stereotypes, I think us blokes aren't particularly great, both at talking about these things, but actually we soldier on a lot of the time.
Exactly.
And actually the thing with burnout is that's
you
probably the worst thing
on. You can't. Yeah. So you're just going to lead to more burnout if you carry, as I understand it anyway. I'm certainly not an expert, but I've been through it. But it's quite a difficult thing to understand if you haven't actually had it. But you're absolutely right. I didn't like to show any sort of weakness. Wanted just to keep soldiering on, but it was the continuation of soldiering on and not listening to my body and, you know, my heart, I guess, to some degree, or, you know, your intuition, that led me to just becoming very, very ill. Trying to spin too many plates. It wasn't just work. It was, you know, just the balance maybe I had in my life, or the lack of doing things that I really enjoyed. I was emptying my cup and not filling it back up, basically, is the easiest way to describe it.
And you said to me earlier that you worked with a burnout coach at the time.
Yeah.
What role did they play, if any, in sort of kind of, for example, helping you fall back in love with golf, or coming back to golf as then a calling, was it a light bulb that went off for you?
So I suppose if I go back after going to the doctors and them saying it's burnout, what can you do? Difficult to actually find someone that can help you in that situation. And there's obviously medication that they can provide, but somewhat limited and not necessarily completely tailored. As I said, I'm not a doctor or anything like that, of course, but completely tailored to just treating burnout. So I sought out and looked for a burnout coach, and she was amazing. And she probably, the best thing she did for me is really helped me understand myself. She had an amazing intuition, and she could read people really, really well. I'd recommend her to anyone that's thinking about burnout. And if anyone's listening, feel free to reach out to me and I'll give you her details. But she helped me to understand myself, and I wasn't even thinking about golf that much at that time, in terms of doing it as a career. You know, I was playing again a little bit and stuff, and she said, every time you speak about golf, you light up. You know, it just seems like you love it. Why don't you try and figure out how to become a coach and go down that path? And yeah, it was at that moment she really pushed me to get back in. I was scared to kind of enter a new world again, but she was a big reason that I'm doing what I'm doing now. So yeah, it was cool moment, to be honest.
You know, you and I were sat here with James, another one of the coaches that coaches here at Norfolk Premier Golf, and there's this wonderful thread and theme between the three of us, for example,
absolutely,
which is reaching a point in our lives where we realize that everything that we've been taught to go after when we come out of school or university or whatever. Which is go out and get the best paying job you can possibly get, ignoring all the stress that might go with it and everything.
Right. And the time constraints, because you're working all the time.
That's right, which affords you pretty much zero headspace to think about anything else as a possibility.
Yeah.
You know, there's this... for all of us, there's this common theme of something happening, like an intervention moment in our lives, which has kind of forced us to A, take a step back and look after ourselves, and then B, create that headspace to then go, actually, there's a life beyond this. And not only that, there's something out there that will make me happier
and still pay the bills
right? And that's brilliant. The journey to becoming a golf coach, I mean, what was that like? Was it, I mean, I maybe would rightly or wrongly assume that that's made easier in some way by the fact of your background golf that you had and the standard to which you played, but how did you find that process of learning and getting the badges to get you to the place that you are now?
I didn't go down the PGA route, so it's not necessarily the conventional route, although I think more people are looking at other options, not just the PGA, in terms of qualifications. So I've done about 7 or 8 different qualifications, whether that's Ledbetter, Altus Performance, and a number of other ones too. But it was just educating myself on what was out there. I had very little knowledge on what was out there initially. So as we all do, a lot of Googling, speaking to friends, seeing what avenues I can kind of go down. I certainly think playing ability and background in the States helps to kick things off. It was just about educating myself. And as I said, the Ledbetter and the Altus or Swing Catalyst or various different qualifications that I've kind of used to enhance my knowledge as a coach and learnt from. It's just been going down that route, really.
Yeah. Gonna just again sort of make a sort of a mention of and a plug for Nine is Fine. By the time probably most people will watch or listen to this, within a few days' time, the Nine is Fine episode that you and I did together will be out as well.
Nice.
I had such fun doing that.
It was great,
Chris.
Fun, wasn't it?
It was tremendous. And I mean, I guess one thing I'll say, so that, you know, it's available on YouTube, is really the only place we'll be putting that out if anyone wants to watch it. But what I think, so many things I spoke to you about out in the course there, and one thing that really stayed with me was how, you know, so for instance, we're sat here recording this in one of the driving range bays, which is probably almost like your bread and butter for where you would bring a coaching client.
Absolutely,
I got the feeling that you just love being out in that course with a client.
Absolutely.
Because as you say, that's where all the hard work...
I wish we had more
work.
Daylight, basically. I think having great technique is so important, but the best way to actually learn how to score lower and be better at golf, the actual game of golf, so we're very different to technique, is to be out on the golf course, and I absolutely love it. You can kind of see that, you saw that out there too. So there's a balance. And I think, we have to work on our technique, but if you want to get better at scoring in particular, there's a ton of stuff we can talk about out there on the golf course that's going to help you to speed up their process. So a bit of both is optimal, but I love being out there probably more than, not that I don't love this too, but even more, I love being out on the golf course.
I was sharing with you that, and as you've alluded to as well, you know, I've just recently revealed to my viewers and my followers that I'm leaving my corporate job, leaving the 9 to 5, going all in and Golf Yourself Healthy and growing it.
Yeah.
And with that, I want this to also, you know, provide me with an opportunity to spend a little bit more time in my own golf game and continue to get better. You know, I was asking you about like, right, okay, so Chris, I'm a 20.7 handicap at the moment, which I didn't have to pay Chris to say that he actually thinks that's not a fair reflection of my... is that a fair thing to say, Chris?
No, yeah, absolutely. It's not a fair reflection of your technique. And obviously the potential you have is to get a lot lower. That's clear. So
And to be clear, I'm not a bandit because I just don't put the cards in. I mean, people will see you probably are a bandit because you're avoiding putting cards in, but I'm genuinely not. But anyway, where I'm going with this is I asked you, I said, right, well, for me to bring that down, even to like say a 15, for example, you said 100 yards and in.
Absolutely. And I'd add on play more golf too. So those two things. So if you're playing once a week, play 2 or 3 times a week, if you can. Sounds like you may have a little
more
bit more flexibility
now,
to do that.
Yeah. But 9 is fine after all. So
absolutely. Play 9 holes more, right? So playing as much golf as you can, but also not neglecting practicing from 100 yards in is for me going to be the quickest way that you're going to get better at golf, at scoring. You've got a good swing, or excellent swing technique wise, looks great, but that's not always going to be there every day. But if you've got a solid short game, tends to be a little bit more repeatable more often than, you know, hitting 200 yard 250 yard shots perfectly every time. So yeah, I just think that's the heart of the game, or the key aspect of scoring, is having a great short game and being really good from 100 yards and in, as well as playing more golf. You need to be out there.
Yeah.
You need to be on that course.
Well, you know, we've talked to you and I today out in the course a bit about resilience, and again, that being from day one, that's been a central theme of Golf Yourself Healthy. And
yeah.
Even this example of working on, you know, I was sharing with you that I find that those shots, like the 70 yarders, are the knee knocker ones for me.
Yeah, there you go.
And it's like there's something about leaning into like facing up to your fears and the stuff that makes you uncomfortable.
Absolutely.
Because the only way you overcome those things is by working on them.
Absolutely.
So I think what I'm a sort of a pact that I'm going to try and make with myself is, not necessarily purposefully, but like accept that I should be leave. It's fine to be leaving myself 50 yarders, 60 yarders.
Yeah.
Because I've almost developed a tendency recently, because I know, for example, the driver's not working so well. It's like, I plot out each hole. It's like, what clubs do I need to be using to give myself full shots into greens?
Rather than those shorter shots.
And I'm just avoiding the tough stuff, if you get what I mean.
Absolutely. And I think because you don't, it's just stripping that back, or taking that back a step further, you probably don't want to practice that part of your game, because it's not that fun. You're not as good as that part of the game as you are at driving or chipping or putting. So to strip that back further and look at your pitching and your wedge play around those sorts of yardage, that's where you're going to get the biggest improvements. You mentioned knee knockers. We were hitting 9 irons today. You look pretty comfortable there, but from 50 yards or 60 yards, 70 yards and in, you don't feel that comfortable. And your proximity to the hole, in theory, should be a lot better from 50 60, 70 yards, and it should be from 120.
Yeah.
And as you get better, it will be, and it probably is already, to be honest, even despite what you're telling me now. So, yeah, it's a cycle, and if you don't like an area of the golf game, there's often a reluctance to practice in that area. But if you don't like an area of the golf game, it probably tells you where you should be practicing quite a lot, or spending quite a lot of your time. So that's kind of, there's a clue in there somewhere.
Other than my own experience of being with you today, I've not, you know, seen you work with any coaching clients or whatever. I've definitely had a taste today of what your style is. And what I really appreciate with you is just how encouraging you are.
Okay.
And like you were sort of, you know, talking me up and being positive, which I think, and where I want to go with this is, I know about myself, for example, that I'm the sort of person, maybe, by the way, I don't know if you've ever done this with your girlfriend, but my wife and I have tested out, what's our love language, Chris?
Okay.
Right, now, no, so our
I don't think we have
my love language
in any detail.
Is basically flattery and being told,
nice.
Like using words and affirmations about, you know, just expressing sentiments and feelings towards me. She's much more an actions person.
Okay, cool.
Okay, so actions speak louder than
words.
Yeah,
sure.
But where I'm going with this is, I think what I appreciate about you is something that I've not... So my current golf coach is very, very good at that as well, but other golf coaches I've worked with in the past have been... I don't know whether it's too technical, or they've just... What I'm trying to say is they almost haven't adapted or adjusted to what gets the best out of me as a client.
Yeah.
So I almost, you know, again, sorry if I'm almost stealing your answer or your words,
no,
but
please.
Like, you know, you've also talked to me today about, like, golf means different things to different people. So it's like, how are you adapting, or how do you try and adapt your coaching style to meet those different...
Just try and read people's personalities and get an idea for, you know, what they're like in general, but also right down to kind of what kind of day they're having, morning and afternoon, when they come into the practice tee or the lesson tee.
And do you allow them just to volunteer that, or
just
do you ask how they're doing? You
know, probably, just like without probing, probably because I've studied psychology and gone into that, maybe I'm reasonably good at picking up on those cues quite quickly, but I also ask questions and just have a chat with people, and yeah, just trying to try and figure out what type, what they need at that particular time to get better at golf. And yeah, sometimes it might be a bit of tough love. Other times it might be more encouragement. But it's really good. It's really good as a coach to know where someone's confidence level is at when they come into the, when they come to practice and when they come to golf lessons, because it allows you really to tailor the sessions in the most beneficial way possible. So if someone's low on confidence, you need to first of all try and, in my opinion, build that back up, make sure they're enjoying golf, and then from there you might be able to get into the nitty-gritty of the harder stuff. But confidence and building trust has to come first, like in everything, like in business, like in life. Same with golf coaching. That's the way I see it. So yeah,
I just want to come back for a second to you were saying when you worked that burnout coach, that when she noticed or heard you speak about golf, your eyes would light up.
Yeah.
What is it about golf for you then?
I actually struggle to put that into words, but I think where I've dedicated so much time to getting as good as I possibly could, learning about the sport, learning about coach, like just everything, just how much time I've spent, my glove has just kind of, obviously I had a few years where I fell out of love with the game very much so, and it kind of broke my heart, to be honest. But it's I don't know, it's, as I said, it's hard for me to put into words. I just love the game. I love so much about the game and the journey of the game, getting better, improving, the highs, the lows. And I think I like to almost go through people that I coach their journeys with them. I really enjoy that, and when they tell me they've played great, I'm so happy. They've had a good day, or they've hit a great shot, and I can see that they're buzzing. And so yeah, I don't know, just the journey, I guess, the journey of trying to improve is never ending, is it? So, and I think it kind of, because the sport is so difficult, we're all stuck on that journey, aren't we, in some way or another?
Definitely.
So yeah, that's probably it. I don't know if I've done a great job of articulating myself particularly well there, but
you have. And as I said to you earlier, I think just what you've alluded to there about continuous learning.
Yeah.
It sounds like you're very motivated by that, and that is. I always like to refer people back to, and something that's influenced Golf Yourself Healthy a bit is, a few years back, and still to this day on the NHS website, you'll see what they call take 5 steps to well-being.
Right.
Cool. And one of those 5 things is about learning new skills.
Yeah.
And learning, generally.
Yeah.
And so, like you say, both as a coach, as a player, you get that in spades and in abundance.
So much.
And it's never-ending learning in golf. And that's what I think makes it so healthy. On health and on healthy habits.
Sure.
If I were to ask you, what if you had to pick one habit, a healthy habit that will help golfers in their performance to then lead to better enjoyment from the game, what is one healthy habit you would choose or recommend to any golfer?
Resilience, I'd probably say. Whether that classifies as a healthy habit, I suppose it is. It's just, it's kind of a skill set or a trait. I don't know how
it is.
But being resilient is going to help your golf game probably more than any other skill or trait that you have, because there will be difficult times. You can even hit a perfect shot in the middle of the fairway, you're going to be in a divot. So it's time to be resilient then, or you hit a perfect putt and it bobbles and misses the hole. So even right down to when we actually do execute our golf shots well, there's no guarantee the outcome's still going to be as we would like it to be. So yeah, resilience, it's such a hard game. So I think it's certainly, for me, it would be resilience, yeah.
I like a lot what you said in the Nine is Fine content we did today about, so you were talking about kind of letting go of bad shots, right, and kind of not dwelling on them from too long. And we then talked about how actually you can sort of, there's something you can learn out of that as well. You
Absolutely.
Can reflect on it and go, well, why did that happen? And rather than beat yourself up for it, go, well, how could I avoid that next time?
Yeah.
Or, you know, but what I love as well, you then followed it up by talking about how about tracking the shots that you committed to?
Yeah.
Do you want to say more about that?
Like, absolutely, And it's something a chap called benefit. Adam Spracklin, who's a psychologist, and I think he does a lot of work in corporate environments as well, like a performance coach, corporate coach. But I was working with him when I was probably like 18 or 19 years old, on the mental side of golf and enhancing my performance. And we used to track how many shots per round that I would have committed to. So, for example, if I shot 100, hopefully I was shooting a little bit lower at that particular stage in my career. But if I shot 100, how many of those 100 golf shots did I commit to? So next to the score on the first hole on my scorecard, it might be a 5 that I'd made. And then I would write a number next to the 5 that would be my commitment percentage score. So it might have been a 5 out of 5 that hole. It might have been a 4 if I'd not committed to a 6-foot putt. Anyway, get to the end of the rounds and you count up what your score is. How many of those 100 shots did you actually commit to? And then you get a score percentage. And Adam used to set me a target of 90%, I think it was, or more per round, which is quite a hard number to achieve. But it gives you a few things. It gives you, obviously, how well are you committing to golf shots on the way around? So how much of your potential on that day are you kind of getting out of yourself? But I think it also highlights where you're not maybe very either confident or technically strong. Because if you constantly see you're not committing to 3 woods into par fives for your second shot, for example, you may need to look at your technique in that area, or you may need to think about other reasons why you're not executing that particular shot. So it can highlight areas of weakness. And for someone like myself, that's very process driven, someone like yourself, has probably got a similar sort of mindset too.
Yes. Yeah.
We like that sort of thing. And if you're that way inclined and your brain works that way, it can feel quite nice to know that you've got kind of something to fall back on other than just the number you're shooting. Yeah. So it really helped me and probably would help a lot of people that think like us, I guess, in some way. So yeah,
brilliant. Maybe one last question I've got for you before we start rounding it out.
Yeah,
we're going into winter now.
Yeah,
kind of golf season is more or less all a bit over, and
sure,
certainly here in the UK.
Anyway. Yeah.
Any tips on how to make the best of your time for winter practice?
Yeah. So, I mean, I certainly think it's a good time to make swing changes. But what I would say with regards to those swing changes, most people are probably better off not completely reinventing the wheel. So making some changes and combining that with still playing golf. So it's not just about beating balls for the next 6 months and completely revamping your swing. I don't actually think that's, for most people, the fastest way to get better at golf. So I'd have a blend of working on some technical aspects of your game, but also when you can, actually getting out on the golf course and putting that into practice. So it'd be a mix between the two. So it's not just focusing on technique, even though there's kind of almost an expectation, oh, I'll just beat balls and improve my swing. Yeah, do that, but also get out on the golf course and blend it in as well. I think that's important not to forget to do that, and easily done, to be honest.
Well, I was saying to you that I could really get used to playing off mats.
Yeah.
I almost stopped myself before I even said it.
Too. Yeah, yeah.
But I was like, you get a clean contact off it every time.
Nice.
And in a strange way, I think, to your point around making sure you get out in the course during winter.
Yeah.
That's a confidence builder. So although it's not the same conditions you would then find yourself in the new year or whatever, it's, you know, the more that you positively reinforce something,
Absolutely.
You're going to be in a better shape going into the new season.
You're bringing in that aspect too, and you're actually, the swing changes you're making, to see them actually working on the golf course is a great way to build your confidence. So you're absolutely right. I completely agree. Yeah,
definitely. Chris, I'm going to just probably wrap it up here, but I just before we head off, I want to just say thanks so much.
Thank you,
genuinely, because you know you reached out to me. We have a mutual connection in John Payton, at SRV Golf, friend of the podcast, and who has been on this podcast before. And I'm pretty sure it was through, you know, sort of shared content or something along those lines.
Something like that, yeah.
And you sent me a really, really nice post, I've been delighted to get the chance to come and meet you in person today, spend time in your company, play golf with you.
Yeah,
I hope to come back and do it again.
Yeah, I hope so.
Where can we find you to put links in my show notes for people to find you?
Instagram, TikTok, it's just my name, so Chris Cotton, and then golf coaching at the end on both those platforms. So, and if you're obviously in Norwich, you can find me here at Norfolk Prem for golf lessons too. So yeah,
brilliant. Thanks very much.
Yeah,
thank you, Chris. Thanks so much, my friend. All the best. Thank you.
Cheers.